Thank you so much for being here tonight. My name is Brittany, and I am a junior here at Swarthmore, majoring in psychology and environmental studies. And I'm very excited to be introducing Mark Edwards tonight. I was also part of the President's Sustainability Research Fellowship last year, so that's how I kind of got involved with the sustainability efforts. I was working with the Crum Woods for community engagement, working to get people more engaged in the Crum Woods. If you're interested in sustainability as a student, highly recommend that you apply. Applications are open. But anyway, I'd also like to mention I'm excited to introduce Mark Edwards tonight because he is also the keynote speaker for our sustainability conference, our sustainability showcase that is happening Friday in Eldridge Commons from 11:30 to 1:45 p.m. There's also a reception after the talk, there's also a reception after this talk, so that we welcome you to join. And so thank you. So tonight we are in the presence of Mark Edwards. And a lot of people have often heard him referred to as a troublemaker scientist known for exposing the Flint, Michigan water crisis. He is a man who has been recognized as Virginia Tech's distinguished professor, a MacArthur fellow, and has gained attention from various news outlets across the country, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Scientific American. He has been named one of the most influential people in the world by Fortune, Politico, and Times, and has even been named one of Foreign Policy Magazine's 100 Leading Global Thinkers. But after all of Dr. Edwards' work over the years, I don't think he wants us listening to him tonight just for his well-deserved awards. He is the definition of a passionate and devoted person, giving decades of his life and thousands of dollars of his own money toward uncovering unsafe lead levels in water across the country. He has jeopardized his academic career and even lost some friends to save a community from poisoning by the US government. Nevertheless, Edwards never stopped fighting. Before we begin, I would like to say thank you to the many departments and offices who have supported this event. These include, and it's a lot of them, so we're gonna play games, see if you can remember them all with me. The President's Office, the Dean's Division, the Center for Innovation and Leadership, the Lang Center for Civic and Social Responsibility, the Sustainability Office, Environmental Studies, College Libraries, Black Studies, Human Resources, Black Cultural Center, and the Office of the Associate Dean of Diversity, Inclusion, and Community Development. Departments have come together tonight to bring Dr. Edwards as part of the Nature of Truth and Evidence series on campus, which seeks to explore the questions, how do we know what we know, and how should we engage with those who disagree? As is the liberal arts tradition, the Nature of Truth and Evidence series highlights these questions and encourages conversation without exactly giving the answers. Well, what better way to continue this conversation tonight than to engage with Dr. Edwards, a man who was told by the government that his truth was nothing more than rabble-rousing, a man who people shamed because he disagreed with the claim that academia and science is too neutral to engage with human rights. I am most honored to be in the presence of Dr. Mark Edwards tonight for his undying generosity and compassion for humanity, something I think the world needs more of, and we could all learn from Edwards how to embrace a little more. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming a man who embodies social justice, Dr. Edwards.
Well, thank you just so much for that introduction. I assure you that the honor's all mine to be here today. You know, it was just really inspirational meeting with the students and this opportunity to talk about my journey of 16 years, which is really a journey of truth-seeking in an age of tribalism. And for me, it started when I was about 40, when I was hired for a seemingly routine consulting project by the US EPA to solve a problem related to lead in Washington, D.C. drinking water. It turned out to be anything but ordinary. This event eventually became known as one of the great environmental disasters in human history. It's known in the press as the Washington, D.C. lead in drinking water crisis. And what makes this unique is that in the history of science and engineering wrongdoing, as it represents misconduct by local and federal government engineers and scientists. The environmental policemen we paid to protect us became environmental criminals and allowed an unprecedented exposure to best known neurotoxin in the most powerful city in America and perhaps even in the world. And one of the things I learned after exploring this for 8 years, about 30 hours a week as a volunteer and ultimately spending more than $1 million to uncover this, is that there were actually five brave, honest, ethical scientists and engineers who tried to do the right thing to expose this problem, and in return, they were fired. And I didn't know that at the time. Also, I knew I wasn't getting straight answers from the EPA. Things were just not adding up, and it's a whole long story, but pretty soon I was no longer hired by the EPA. And it was only after years of work that we eventually were able to show that hundreds and even thousands of DC children were lead poisoned. Children were not born due to miscarriages and fetal deaths, because that's one of the manifestations of lead exposure through the drinking water. And this was all covered up by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, who came to town and wrote a falsified scientific report claiming no one got hurt. And so this no harm conclusion is what covered this up. And it wasn't until 2009 that we were able to write a paper that definitively showed scientifically what we had known for actually more than 2,000 years of human history, going back to Roman days, that if people drink too much lead in their water, they get lead poisoning. And when this article came out, it prompted a bipartisan congressional investigation into how on earth this could have happened. And this report concluded that what CDC had done was to cover up the harm from the lead in water by engaging in scientifically indefensible work. Amongst the many things they did in this so-called peer review, this paper that they wrote, was to present data that they could not find to this day. And I question whether it even exists. And so, you know, in the aftermath of this bipartisan report, our team got a lot of high-profile publicity. It was written up in Prism and Time and Chronicle of Higher Education. And actually, on the journey, I also was fortunate enough to get the call from MacArthur Foundation, which is honestly the best call you can ever get, because they just come and give you a check for $500,000 and never bother you again. I wish everyone in this room could experience that once in their life. But, you know, the unfortunate thing was that the agencies that covered this problem up, they did not learn from their mistakes. So if I was to summarize the takeaway messages of what occurred, they learned that if they attacked good people and defended bad people, they would come out of this okay. Because not one person at the five agencies that caused this crime was held accountable or fired. In fact, they gave themselves gold medal awards for their service. They also got a dangerous arrogance about them along the lines of, hey, if we got away with this, we can get away with anything. But it would be better if we got better at covering up and hiding these problems from the public, because that sure was embarrassing to us. And the types of problems that they got good at covering up were lead in drinking water, for which there was a federal law, and Legionella, for which there's not. Lead is the oldest environmental contaminant known to humankind. As I said, that knowledge goes back to Roman times. Legionella is something we just discovered. We're still trying to sort out how to deal with that. So if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're doomed to repeat them. And with this being the lessons learned, we knew that another Washington, D.C. was inevitable. We just didn't know where or when it was going to occur. But we started to plan for that day. And for us, that day came in 2015, when my friend at the US EPA, who's one of the foremost experts on the lead and copper rule in the country, started emailing me about a problem in Flint, Michigan. And that proved to be the understatement of the year. But this is sort of what set the stage for our involvement in Flint. And I'm going to argue that what occurred there was really just an amazing triumph of citizen science. And in many ways, it was actually a miracle that we got this problem exposed and this vulnerable population protected from further harm. So how did this story start? Well, it starts like almost all engineering and science disasters. Someone screwed up. Okay, they got lazy, they were stupid, I don't know, we're humans, that's what we do. But they had switched to the local Flint River as a cost-saving measure while a new pipeline was being built. And this is the famous ribbon-cutting ceremony where they're turning the water on and they're toasting, here's to Flint, this is a historic day for us. And that certainly proved to be true, not quite for the reasons they thought. Because someone at the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, who was overseeing the system, for some reason or another forgot to follow federal law. They forgot to make sure corrosion control was present in the water. And corrosion control is one of the most important things we do in drinking water treatment. Go figure. That's why we got a law. Thou shalt use corrosion control. Why? Because for every dollar you spend on corrosion control, you'll probably save $10, $100, or $1,000 in damage avoided to your pipe system. Also, that corrosion control lines the pipes and tends to keep the lead and iron out of the water and on the pipe. So it's just a common sense measure. It saves money. It protects the public health. That's why we have a law. But what happened in Flint was the residents aren't corrosion control experts, but they knew almost immediately something was going wrong. Reports started coming out on social media that people were bathing and coming out with very, very severe rashes or breathing difficulties. And after a few months went by, water that looked like this started to come out of the tap. Now, the woman in this picture, she's an amazing person. She's an American hero, and I'm proud to call her my friend. Her name is Leanne Walters. And what Leanne's holding up to this bureaucrat, and she's complaining about this, is the water that came into her house after it was filtered. After it was filtered. And this bureaucrat is telling her that, first off, I don't really believe that that's true. But secondly, if it is, that water's safe. Now that takes a lot of nerve. Because you gotta realize something about Flint, which is Flint, for reasons due to the fact of its declining population and large infrastructure, the residents pay amongst the highest water rates in the world for water that looks like that. And we now know that that water is not safe. We now know that that water contained hazardous waste, levels of of lead, so much so that if you had one sip of that water, it would cause lead poisoning of a child. And that's indeed what happened to Leanne's children. We also know that that water contained dangerous amounts of Legionella bacteria. And how do we know that? Because Leanne figured it out. This amazing mom, she witnessed a living experiment in front of her, two twin boys. One of the twins was not growing as fast as the other, both physically and socially. And she questioned why, and she figured out that that twin had elevated lead in his blood, also known as lead poisoning. She figured out that her water had too much lead in it. She reached out to my friend Miguel Del Toro, and the two of them figured out that federal law was not being followed in Flint. So this mom did it all. And so I had learned what was going on from my friend Miguel at EPA, and we're trying to plot, because we both know how dysfunctional EPA is at the present moment. And in fact, over the last 16 years, when it comes to this lead and water issue, it sounds crazy, but we're sitting there going, how can we make EPA do their job? and enforce federal law in Flint. And we thought about it long and hard, and eventually Miguel, a brave man near the end of his career, decided to put it on the line and write a memo that, in no uncertain terms, laid out the imminent and substantial endangerment that Flint residents were facing. And the thought was, when this memo was written and it came out, EPA would be forced to protect residents of Flint. And so this is the memo that came out June 24, 2015, and it was everything Miguel sought to make it. He made it perfectly clear that the absence of corrosion control treatment was a problem that was endangering the health of an entire city, and he was asking EPA to exert emergency powers to protect the residents of Flint who were not being protected by the state Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. On the day this memo came out, EPA began to retaliate against Miguel. He was asking, what did I do wrong? And he was told by the EPA ethics officer that you are just not to talk to anyone from Flint or about Flint again. So Miguel was out, and the next morning, when he was still very angry about what happened, for being punished for doing his job, he wrote an email to his colleagues, which we discovered through Freedom of Information Act. I'm really, really tired of bad actors being defended, bad actions being ignored, and people trying to do the right thing are constantly being subjected to intense scrutiny as if they're the ones doing something wrong. I truly, truly hate working here. EPA is a but he's out. Famous last words, right? So EPA found a different person to be the poor person for Flint. This person was Jennifer Crooks, and she was now the one receiving the calls from Flint residents complaining about their water, of which there are many. Here's an email that she wrote to her friends at the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Yep. Another complaint about our favorite water supply, smiley face. Let me tell you, this Flint situation is a nasty issue. I've had people call me using four-letter words, calling me a crook, but I'm developing a thicker skin. A thicker skin is probably the last thing that's needed at this point. So, you know, here's the situation. This problem had been going on for months. In the press, it had been noted that General Motors could no longer accept Flint water because it was rusting their car park. And the state bragged in internal emails that they successfully derailed any discussion about that being linked to any health problems of Flint residents. So people are literally marching in the streets. This is the water that they're paying the highest rates in the world for. Young children are being impacted, they have rashes, there's lead exposures that we now know that were occurring. And this whole time, people are being told that Flint water is safe to drink, when everyone with any knowledge about science and engineering knew that that was not true. And that includes the EPA and the state of Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Once again, the environmental policemen were the environmental criminals, just like DC. And this is just so disturbing to me. I cannot begin to tell the thought that engineers and scientists would behave this way. And when I read these emails, I was just shocked to see politicians reaching out at the right time, trying to get more information and going to the right people and asking the right questions and being lied to. The mayor of Flint saw Miguel's memo, and he reached out to Susan Hedman, who runs EPA Region 5. She's the top environmental policeman in the region. And he asked her, is there anything I should be concerned about in this memo? And Susan Hedman wrote him back right away and apologized that Miguel's memo had been written. And she said, we're going to vet it, and if there's anything here to be concerned about, we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Have a happy 4th of July, quote unquote. So the mayor, reassured, now goes on TV to tell everyone a few days later that he drinks Flint water all the time and that they should too. Now, he was later blamed for doing this, but I ask you, who is more guilty? The person who heard a lie and believed it, or the person who told a lie? That's how screwed up this is. It's the engineers and scientists restored my faith in politicians. But, you know, that's the situation. And so at this point, we knew we'd given the system every last chance to work. And if you want to criticize us about anything, it was the idea that it could have worked in the first place, and we waited too long. But at that point, we got really, really angry. And we launched our intervention. And the way it rolled out was that we were just going to break all the rules, everything we'd ever been taught as academics about what not to do. We were going to do that. We were going to go there. So first off, we had saved up money in a special discretionary account at the school so that we could launch this effort and not go to jail for using state funds to save the world, because that's illegal. Secondly, we had the opportunity here to just pursue science as a public good in direct collaboration with the public. And we essentially declared war on these unethical science and engineering agencies. And that's what we were waging. We're waging a science war. And you don't fight a war to wound, you fight a war to win. And the most critical weapon that we employed goes to Joseph Campbell and the monomyth, The Hero's Journey. Because history has shown that if you want to reach people, you have to tell the hero's journey, period. I'm sorry. And our strategy was to tell the heroic journey of the Flint residents, as illustrated by Leanne Walters and others. And so that was our plan, and the first step in that was to first announce to the world our presence on social media, on a site we set up, separate from the university, because if this failed, we had to be sure that we could be cut loose from the university with minimal harm. And what we sought to do was to send sampling kits to Flint, Michigan, so that the residents could do the job that the federal agencies paid to do this job, which was to test their water and see if it was safe. And we provided the funding, the technical support, the analytical support, and the residents did all the hard work, and they did an amazing, amazing job. Ultimately, they were able to show that there was a citywide lead problem in contradiction to the EPA and the state data, which said there was no problem at all. The second part of our offensive was to develop simple experiments that anyone could understand, because we had to engage our beleaguered fourth estate, the press, if we wanted to win this battle. And so amongst the experiments that we started was something just like this, where we had the water from Detroit, which was what was going into Flint before the water crisis, compared to the water in Flint after the crisis. Now, the water on the top has no corrosion control. The water on the bottom has corrosion control. And what we did is we put into those waters a little piece of steel that represents the pipes that are present in Flint. And not surprisingly, when that was put into the water without corrosion control, it turned really, really brown and rusty because the water ate the pipe up. And in Detroit water, when corrosion control was there, there was much less rust. So it tells a simple story that anyone can understand. This is what you had, now you're here. No wonder Flint residents are complaining. They're not crazy. Another simple experiment that we launched involved lead. And these are little samples of copper pipe with lead solder on them. And once again, we compared what happened to these samples in Detroit water, which is what they were using before, compared to Flint water without corrosion control. And you see the difference in the water and the white stuff in the Flint water, that's lead. So much lead you can see it. Hazardous waste, levels of lead. This is what poisoned Leanne's children and was poisoning children all across Flint at that time. here we go. One of the great things about science and engineering is it's reproducible. And the state should have done this test before they brought the Flint plant online. You're supposed to, but they didn't. And we said, you know, this test only took us a week. I have sent you this apparatus so you can just pour water in, dump it out, pour water in, dump it out. And in a week, you can see this same result and know what you've unleashed against Flint's residents. The state refused to do the test. And so this illustrates a really important principle, which is it's a waste of time to try to reason with unreasonable people. And science and data are useless against folks like this. And this is what I've learned in DC. And if you're dealing with folks like this, unfortunately, the only thing that they respond and understand to is ridicule. And I feel I am a nice person, and I do not like to ridicule people. But if it means doing that or standing by and watching a city be destroyed and kids being lead poisoned, yeah, I'll go there, okay? So our plan, since the state would not repeat the result, I made a collaboration with a fourth grade classroom. They repeated the experiment, and in a week, they saw the exact same thing we did, and they got on the local news, and the state looked ridiculous. Because these fourth graders could show what was happening in Flint. And if that wasn't embarrassing enough, we then went nuclear on them, and we engaged a group of Brownie Troop scientists. And we had them write letters to the governor based on what they saw, and I compiled all their letters, and I sent it FedEx to EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C., and I said, isn't it amazing this group of Brownie Troop scientists in Flint understand this problem? And you folks sitting in Washington, D.C. don't. And we put this on our website, and it ran on a lot of national media, including The Atlantic, and suddenly the ridicule factor is going through the roof. We also did the unthinkable, which is to go up and stand on the lawn with Flint residents and present our collaborative results showing a lead problem across the city. And the next day, when we're leaving to the airport, this was the headline in the Flint Journal. And I remember telling my student, you know, if I'm wrong on this, you're going to have to get another advisor because I'm going to be fired here pretty quick. But thankfully, history vindicated us and showed that we were right, that this was an epically bad decision. But this was the first time anyone in Flint had seen anyone from a science and engineering background come in and say, you are not crazy. What's going on here is just horrible. And so really, you know, we were just going all in for Flint. We were putting it all on the line for him. And at that point, September 24th, we reached out to the local medical community and worked with an amazing young pediatrician, Dr. Mona, who repeated the blood lead studies we did in DC, and we stayed up all night for a week to do that work because she had the data. And she was able to hold a press conference and show that in real time, Flint residents' blood lead was rising. So we had the link. No corrosion control, high lead in water, records of children with elevated blood lead. And at that point, we reached this critical mass of moral courage, the tipping point that was required to get action. And so it was October 1st, just 6 weeks after we launched FlintWaterStudy.org, this became front page in the New York Times. And the state had said it was impossible to ever go back to Detroit water. They could not do it, but believe me, once this became a national story, they found a way to turn the valve and get Detroit water to flow back into the city of Flint. That happened early October. So the other thing that we predicted based on our laboratory experiments that they would have a lead problem, we also predicted they have a Legionella problem. And the general idea was that if you have no corrosion control and an unlined iron pipe, you grow a lot of Legionella bacteria. That was the hypothesis. It took us a while to show that, but eventually did. And it was January 2016 that we went to the local Department of Health and They admitted that they had known about a Legionella outbreak for some time, but they had no reason to think it was tied to the Flint River. So this is a graph of Legionella cases. This is the time they're on the Flint River here. 12 people died, ultimately, due to the lack of corrosion control, which contributed to this outbreak, which is considered the third largest Legionella outbreak in U.S. history. The largest one tied to poor management of a drinking water system. And the FOIAs later showed that the state knew about this and didn't want to tell anyone because the announcement would inflame the situation in Flint. This knowledge was withheld from the public. So, I mean, at this point, like, the pressure was just rising. And what we had done, this amazing collaboration that we played our small part in, was to illustrate that what happened in Flint was an environmental crime. It was a crime perpetrated by government agencies against one of our most vulnerable populations, the people of Flint. And this is our poorest city in the country, number one poorest city in the country. And if you, as a society, are judged by how you treat your most vulnerable, we do not look very good right now. And so President Obama acted to declare a federal emergency, and federal funds started to flow to Flint. The National Guard was mobilized, FEMA was mobilized, bottled water went to Flint. It became a cause du jour for celebrities to give water to Flint. Children had their blood lead tested, and amongst the other things that are going on is that Flint's water pipes were in horrible shape to start with, and the lack of corrosion control even made them worse. So this is kind of what a commute looks like in Flint right now, because the water pipes break. They have about 100 times the main breaks per population of a normal U.S. city, and it's like living kind of in a war zone here. And when the announcement of the Legionella problem came out, Governor Snyder correctly noted that, wow, this really just added to the whole disaster that we experienced. And so, you know, on this journey, I mean, I've had just incredible frustration, and one of them is lack of government accountability. And one of the questions I was asking myself at this point in time is, like, what on earth does it take to get a government official fired? I mean, here you got a case where federal law was broken, a city's vital infrastructure was destroyed, neighborhoods of children with elevated lead in their blood, got 12 people dead from Legionella. What does it take? So, you know, we testified to Congress. Once I testified with Leanne, the next time I testified, this is my sixth time testifying to Congress, and that Susan hasn't been on the end. That was too close for comfort for me. And, you know, it's just a lot of finger pointing, nothing happens. And but then at that point, something unusual happened, which is it got on Comedy Central. I'll pay this clip from Trevor Noah.
The saddest thing about this leak is how little it would have cost to prevent it all.
The fix was about $100 a day. All of this could have been avoided for just that small amount of money.
$100 a day. Why didn't you say something? I want to call out to all my people in Africa right now watching the Daily Show. Because my friends, for only $100 a day, we can save a village in America. We can save water that they so badly need for just the price of 5 cups of coffee in New York.
All right, so now you've really crossed the line. You know, now America is an international embarrassment, and that's the threshold. That's the threshold you have to reach to make things happen. So within a week of that, Susan Hedman resigned. To date, there's been 15 indictments of civil servants so far, and this is almost unprecedented. Those trials are going on as we speak. In the aftermath of Flint, investigative reporters started looking around and find out what happened in Flint wasn't that unusual. It was only unusual they got caught because many of our largest cities were also cheating on the lead and copper rule, to make the lead in water look like it was meeting federal law when it wasn't. And despite that cheating, despite all that cheating, there's still 5,000 U.S. water systems that are still over the EPA action level. So this is a national problem, just like we knew after the lessons learned in the Washington, D.C. crisis. And so this is really a national betrayal. And it's had national implications. Last year, bottled water sales exceeded soda sales in this country for the first time, largely because people's trust in their water has been undermined from Flint. And, you know, money started flowing to Flint, federal, state, and private money. To date, $600 million has gone to Flint. That's over $67,000 per Flint child. These are unprecedented sums of money. It does my heart good to see that. If you expose an injustice, people do the right thing in a bipartisan way. And the unthinkable also happened. We were actually hired by the EPA and the state. And so one day we're fighting them tooth and nail, and the next day they threw in the towel and said, sorry, thanked us for exposing corruption. Can you now please help us fix this problem? That never happened, but it did. And so we've been working on the response now, and I gotta say, the EPA, once Ms. Hedman was gone, and the state, did an amazing job. You know, they rededicated themselves to their mission. They tried to help the people of Flint get this problem fixed. And the water in Flint is now no less safe than any other U.S. city. This is a picture of McLaren Hospital during the crisis. And you can imagine why Legionella bacteria are growing there. This is the same exact tap in March of last year. So the benefits have been profound. But at this point, we started to have something very scary happening. And we were having tragedy on top of tragedy, because what we were about to witness is what happens in a society when all trust is gone. When a city loses trust in all institutions, including government agencies, what do they turn to? There's a vacuum. And science anarchists were drawn to this. And I'm going to tell you some of the examples of what happened. So one of the things that happened was that some advocates overstated the harm that was done. So by a show of hands, how many people in this room have heard in the media that Flint children have been permanently brain damaged by the lead exposure that's occurred? How many of you have heard that? Okay, excellent. That means you're good. You're educated citizens listening to the media. I know exactly where you got that, because I've read it over and over and over again. Unfortunately, that message is just flatly false. This is the actual incidence of elevated blood lead in Flint as a function of time. Now, reducing lead in blood has been one of the greatest public health triumphs of the last 20 years, because we got rid of lead in gasoline and food, we have regulations, and we're controlling lead in paint. And Flint, like other cities, the blood lead of their children is plummeting. That's the great news. And if you look at the line of incidents above 10 micrograms per deciliter, almost nothing really happened during the Flint water crisis here. The average blood lead of Flint children continued to go down. And if you look at the incidence of children above 5 micrograms per deciliter, which is the current threshold for elevated blood lead that the CDC has, you see that slight bump there? That's the Flint water crisis. So what happened there, it's inexcusable. It's horrible. But what happened was merely normal for what was going on in Flint just 5 years earlier. These children are not, by and large, irreversibly brain dead. Now, they would have been if we hadn't intervened in time, because the lead was really just starting to fall off the pipes. And if we hadn't pulled off that miracle with Flint residents, very, very serious harm would have occurred. So why is this happening? Why is this being oversold?
Well, because there are advocates out there who want to do the right thing by Flint residents and to get them funded. And if you don't oversell the harm that's done, you're not going to get the money. But that also comes at a cost. Okay, it comes at a high cost. And there are parents in Flint who've heard this story and who tell their children, you've been brain damaged and you can't learn in school. We went to Flint in March of last year. Teachers were telling us they can't teach the children because they've been brain damaged. This is the last thing that Flint kids need to hear, with all the other things, all the other adversity that they face, a message like this. And this kind of message creates real harm and quite potentially even more harm than the lead exposure. The other sort of thing that happened after the emergency was declared and everyone was rolling up their sleeves and trying to work on this problem, all these people came and tried to help. And one of those was actor Mark Ruffalo. And he brought his nonprofit Water Defense to town. And his idea was that he was going to give these sponges that Water Defense was pushing. They just developed them and give them to residents so that they could test their water. They came into town, and it's very clear from their first video, they had one intention and one intention only, which was to claim that the water in Flint was not safe for bathing or showering before they took a single sample. They announced that on YouTube. And there are reasons that we take baths and showers. Basic public hygiene, so important to public health. Prevents horrible, horrible diseases. One of those is Shigella, which is spread by fecal contact hand to hand. If you ever get this, it's a really horrible disease to go through. What happened in Flint after Mark Ruffalo's nonprofit came to town and started scaring people about the supposed dangers of bathing and showering? Flint was about to experience one of the worst Shigella outbreaks in their history. And it started just a week or so after Ruffalo's team came to town. How did they scare people? One of the first things they did is they ran around taking samples that were completely improper. And they claimed that they discovered unprecedented levels of chloroform, which is a carcinogen, and it was more than they'd seen in 62 disasters that they visited. And they said they measured chloroform in bathtubs and showers all over the country, and most of the time there's nothing there. Well, it turns out that they had never tested any bathtubs and showers anywhere in the country, contrary to what they said. And moreover, the chief scientist at Water Defense has no scientific credentials at all. He's a failed entrepreneur who tried to sell these sponges to clean up oil spills, and instead he started thinking, I can use them for water testing. So we were testing for the chloroforms in Flint. It was totally normal, lower than normal. We hired third and fourth party researchers from academic institutions to come in and verify this. Dave Reckow from UMass, Susan Richard from University of South Carolina. Everyone discovered that the TTHMs and the chloroform in Flint was lower than normal. This message was completely false. But Flint residents who had been betrayed by the government before and betrayed by authority before, they believed this. But, you know, they went on YouTube and they had all these YouTube videos. Scott Smith from Water Defense, bathing in Flint is not safe. They were on the local media telling people that if they let their children bathe in this water, they are hurting them and exposing them to carcinogens. And moms and dads started changing their children's bathing habits. Everyone, many people in Flint did. The CDC later study showed 80% of Flint residents changed their bathing habits, including 75% showered less frequently, 70% were taking shorter showers. And so we saw what was going on. We tried to reach out to Mr. Ruffalo. and tell him the dangers of what he was doing. We set up a conference call because, again, you're trying to reason with people. That's always the first step, and they didn't show up. We told them if they didn't correct their false messaging, we were going to call them out, and they just blew us off. And so at that point, we had a massive confrontation. That was part of the point of the New York Times article, but this Shigelnikar wasn't known at that time. And so after we wrote up, our criticism of Rafali pretty much got trashed in the national media. And you'd think, okay, he would be concerned about his reputation, but you would be wrong. Because they were doubling down. They're going to double down on their Flint strategy. So what they did is this nonprofit, Water Defense, went out and formed an alliance with an alternative news network. Because by this point, the normal media would not listen to them. They'd been totally discredited. And this network is called the Young Turks Network. And apparently, they're like one of the hottest things ever, according to them at least. The largest online news organization in the world. I never heard of them until I started suddenly getting 300 death threats in the course of a week because they started targeting me. And so what we decided to do was we had to expose their 12-step program of science, anarchy, fear-mongering. And the way we did it is we took their videos that they posted online to expose exactly how they operated. We put this on a blog post, and I'm going to show you snippets of this so you get an idea of what we're dealing with here. And I must warn you, this is for mature audiences only, and we've rated it F for fear-mongering. Okay, so everyone's on board for this? You can leave if you want, but okay. So, the first step is to get a kitchen knife and an unsterile water bottle. Okay. The next step is to announce to the world you're going to find lead and bacteria in the water that no one else has found.
Scott Smith with the Water Defense Council, he's done private testing in about 30 Flint homes. He has gone through very, very extensively and carefully to find bacteria that the state has not found in Flint. Bacteria in just about every home he's tested. I'm not going to pretend to know the names of the bacteria.
Okay. The next thing you should establish, why should people listen to you? What are your scientific credentials?
Scott Smith with the Water Defense Council.
I don't know whether it's safe to shower or not. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a toxicologist, and I'm no PhD in statistics because I'm not a trained plumber or pipe fitter.
I'm no scientist, I'm no environmental expert. Most of you don't know this, but I was in special ed from first to third grade. I had a learning disability. That's all the story I want to make. I need to be in special ed.
I'm no expert either.
But
also, I'm not a medical expert, but I am an expert on what medical experts have told me. Does that sound about right? Correct. Yes, also. Yes. Dr. Chairman.
Okay, so having established your team's scientific credentials, now go and try to show how dangerous the water is by sampling the outside of a sewer pipe in the basement.
So we're going to be getting water and what looks like a bacterial fungi. We're going to be collecting them, and he's going to be testing them. And by the way, I can barely set up a TV, so it's going to be pretty.
Okay, now, since the whole point is to find the bacteria that no one else is finding, it's not enough to go collect the sample from the outside of the sewer pipe. When you're preparing the sample to be shipped off to the lab, drop the cap on the floor, rub the cap on your shirt, and oh, by the way, rub your finger across your nose.
Good. Let me just put this on here.
Okay, now you've collected the sample. Send this off to an independent lab who has no idea where this sample came from to get the results.
Chris, the key thing is the independent lab that we go to.
And then, once you get the results, have a prime time expose of what you
think. Last Friday's Howard panel showed you a video of two elected politicians and Georgia Chairman drawing water from a water heater in East Chicago, Indiana, that looked like absolute sewage. Scott Smith of Water Defense was already in for that testing.
Exactly. We tested it, and boy, it did not come out good at all. Exactly. It came out terrible.
Hello?
Hey, Wanda.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello.
I'm Lisa Scott. Happy Friday once again.
Happy Friday, Scott.
Hi, Keisha.
Hi, how are you? Here.
Good. How are you? How's your day? How's your Friday? I have your results, and there are some similarities to Flint. As far as your walk.
Okay, and to, for maximum effect, bring Ruffalo out from Hollywood and explain that what you're doing is citizen science, and there's nothing wrong with giving people data.
Not whether or not. My organization is scientists because we're citizen scientists, you know? And so all we're doing is giving people information, and there's nothing wrong with that. And the more information people have, the better off they are.
Okay, so when we posted this, it turns out that Hollywood actors take this sort of thing very, very seriously, as do the Young Turks Network. They apparently have no sense of humor whatsoever. We started getting emails threatening us from Mr. Cheriton, who warned he's working on an additional piece, which proved you are a hack, and he threatened a public dispute with the largest online news network in the world unless we took the entire blog post down. On top of that, we got three letters from Ruffalo's attorneys telling us to cease and desist or else we'll see you in court. And we did not take the blog post down, nor did we cease or desist. We had a few things go in our way, one of which was Jordan was caught engaged in an orgy with a subordinate in Flint, and he got fired as part of the Me Too movement. And we ultimately, through our investigative work, found that Scott Smith, working under the guise of a nonprofit in Flint, had actually also launched his own private company called Aquaflex Holdings, and we found their investor pitch online, which was to satisfy unmet needs as the water defense team exposes problems. So this is the epic George Orwell quote, that the true genius of advertising is to find a problem and then sell the solution. And we even found from residents, Mr. Smith promoting safe showers in Flint by purchasing an $11,000 filter system, of which he was going to get $2,100 cut. That really takes some nerve to go to Flint, scare people, try to push an $11,000 filter on them so they can enjoy a safe bath or shower. And at that point, Mark Ruffalo cut ties with Scott Smith. So, you know, here you have the aftermath of Flint, this total science anarchy, this total social anarchy. And you can only imagine what it's like to have lived through this from the perspective of a Flint resident who's been betrayed by everyone, betrayed by the government, science, and Hollywood. And this is a clip from the launch, a resident talking at the beginning of the Nova documentary on Flint. You can see the angst that's very real.
I have stopped using the filters and back to bottled water. My water is not corrected. You know, I want to shower at home. I want to be able to use my water and a lot of my kids to be healthy. My
daughter. And so, you know, with that, I'll just kind of wrap this up. This is a really, really sad and scary story. And I will remind you of the great scientist and humanitarian Albert Einstein, who once famously and correctly said that the world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. And that was true then, and it is true today. And I will also say, just, you know, from my own perspective, that this was an amazing experience for me to be part of this critical mass of moral courage that helped expose the plight of Flint residents. And I have lost many of the friends I had when I started this journey, probably 90% plus. But I met other friends, and this is a picture of a few of us. This is Leanne, Miguel, Mona, and myself. And I can just tell you at this time, it was just amazing to get up every day with such a sense of purpose and to do the job that we were born to do. And I just wish everyone could experience something like that just once in their lives, to be part of something bigger than themselves. And the other interesting side note is, in this picture we have a renounced Catholic, a communist, a socialist, and a Republican, and that was never an issue, not once. So with that, I'll just thank you for your attention and open up to any questions you may have. Thank you.